Pour something flammable into your glass. It's time for Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. Nathan, I'm slightly hyper because I just ate half a pecan pie.
Sounds delicious.
And I'm going to start drinking some maple whiskey.
Well,
so I'm going to be drunk and sugar rushed.
That's what I was going to say, though. The alcohol is needed to counteract the sugar.
We all know it doesn't counteract shit. It just makes the hangover worse. I am liquored. You know what I need? Ice cream.
What, you mean like how every single time, bar none, in the summertime when we're over at your house, we somehow start grilling pineapple after midnight?
Yes. Why? Nobody knows. It just happens. Oh, God. Yes, you are listening to Jaded Gamercast. I am drinking whiskey. Nathan, what are you drinking?
Tanqueray gin with ginger ale.
You know, I actually did the intro differently this time. I said it's time for Jaded Gamercast as opposed to it's Jaded Gamercast.
I know.
As soon as I said it, I was just like, that wasn't right. I apologize to all the people who demand, things never change.
Yeah, so. I was going to say, were you going to say perfection? Because I don't think that they're listening to the right podcast.
No, they listen to us for personality. I would say even tactics are a close seventh on the list of why they come to this podcast. But, yeah, it's been a very interesting week with the Eldar because, again, we still get a lot of people going up and down on it. It's one of those books that is still fairly polarizing. I don't think it's the standout of Warhammer 40,000 right now, but it's definitely a really strong one. And I did find that while building my list, I was actually very impressed with the book because I found that, you know, building up to 1850, I was able to take everything I wanted, but literally just did not have enough slots to completely to get everything I wanted in the quantities that I wanted, right? I think honestly you're going to see a lot of people playing this list with, you know, that second force organization chart coming out there and running it that way just because of the price of the troops and the price of the HQ. Real reason that you have to stick to one force org chart. But I think this one almost promotes you like, no, you want two force org charts. Like, this is the way you want to go.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, everything is just so cheap and good in this book. I mean, my list is 1,850 points, and I have one HQ, four troops, three fast and three heavy. Like, I've maxed out two slots at 1,800, you know, at 1,850, and that's comfortable.
Well, I took everything I wanted to take and had 150 points left over for 1,850. So, I was very, very impressed with that. But we'll get on to what our lists include later on here in the show. Let's go on to the weekly listener poll from last week, which was, would you take a Wraith Knight in your army list? I threw that in there because we forgot to have a question at the end of the podcast.
Well, it happens when you break hour two and we're both drunk.
You break hour two and we're both liquored. We're ready to just end the podcast at that point. But yes, would you take a Wraith Knight in your army list? This was 2/3 said yes, 1/3 said – oh, no, I'm sorry. 2/3 said no. 2/3 said no. So 20 votes for no and 10 votes for Dick Shields for the win and 1 vote for Fuck Pansy Space Elves. But, hey, there you go. I don't get it. I mean, I tried to build it into my list. I kind of looked at the idea of, like, taking two of them or three of them and trying to build a list around that and just – making them that core standing out in front of everything else type list that's going to kind of deal with anything coming their way. But really they're way too damn expensive. And when you're talking about 900 points for three models that are monstrous creatures, not even, you know, vehicles or anything like that.
Well, I mean, they are tough as nails. And I think that's really the only thing that they really have going for them is toughness 8 with 6 wounds, a 3-up save.
But a bad roll fucks you, and that's the problem, right? And that's always going to be the problem.
It's true, but when Melta weapons need 4s to wound you and Plasma need 5s, you're still sitting in a good place. I mean, don't get me wrong. I am definitely in the fuck no camp, you know, and I'm not saying that Wraith Knights are bad. I just think that them sitting in the heavy support slot is bad because, I mean, I can take Dark Reapers up to a unit of 10 Dark Reapers now, which is fucking huge because they've always been capped at 5. But now I can have 10 of the bastards. why would I not want this, especially for the cost of a single Wraith Knight?
Well, and it's what are you buying a Wraith Knight for? You buying it for anti-tank? There's better options. Are you buying it for combat? There's better options.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's what it is you've got a heavy support section with 8 possible choices, of which I would say 5 of them are brilliant. Brilliant mm-hmm. choices, and you're in great yeah. shape taking any of them, and the Wraith Knight is not one of those 5.
No.
So it's just like, yeah, it's better than a Falcon, but I think everything in the heavy support slot is better than a Falcon. I mean, fuck, a Wave Serpent is 10 points cheaper and better than a Falcon,
yeah.
and is a dedicated transport, so it doesn't even eat up a slot. So it's just like, you look at this slot, and you're just like, yeah, you know, the Wraith Knight is, you know, the Wraith Lord, Wraith Knight are basically tied, because they're effectively the exact same model.
Well, and I think
The Wraith Lord is half the points with half the wounds.
Right, exactly. See, and that's kind of the thing that drives me nuts about the Wraith Lord and the Wraith Knight being in the same slot. I have no problem with the Wraith Knight being in heavy support. I think that it's a competitive, quote-unquote, heavy support slot, but I wouldn't necessarily say that it's going to compete with the stuff that's there. However, the Wraith Lord, it needs to be an elite. It needs to be a Dreadnought. There's no reason to have it in heavy support whatsoever. The fact that it's half the points for half the wounds, I'd rather take 2 Wraith Lords than a Wraith Knight. And yes. that's all it comes down to, right? Because then I know, okay, I'm using them for combat. I'm using them for getting in. I'm using them for tar pitting. You know, like there's a very specific goal in mind when you're talking about what that model's doing. Whereas the Wraith Knight for 300 plus points with upgrades, you know, it's insane. It's completely crazy to actually try to rationalize something like that. So anyways, Nathan and I agree. The majority of you guys agree with us after our last episode. So let's get into talking about our model of the week. So our model of the week for this week is Illich Knight Spia.
Ooh.
He is the fancy, fancy top knot sniper who is actually a pretty nice model, I would say.
Yeah, you know... When I look at him, he is basically the opposite of our Lore Master of Hoeth, you know? So the Lore Master mm-hmm. of Hoeth was stupid everywhere with so much bling on him that Mr. T is just like, dude, tone it the fuck down, okay? I mean, I'm all for making a statement, but I pity the fool who wears as much bling as you.
Oh, I was going to go better than... I pity the fool who makes me look conservative.
Well done. On the other hand, you have Illich Nightspear, who is a really subdued model. I love the fact that he's basically wearing Guardian armor with a poncho. Maybe the poncho is not so good, but like I said, I do like that they stuck with Guardian armor. He's got a little bit of detailing, but no more than usual. I think it's hilarious that his gun is taller than he is. But for me, there's just a lot of little things that fall apart. Like, one, why is a master sniper not aiming his gun? Why is he in the Spider-Man pose? Because that's total Spider-Man 3. Just put a fucking yeah. American flag behind him. And that is the pose as he lands. You know, he's not aiming his gun. He's got a stupid fucking top knot. And I mean, seriously, Games Workshop, you can have your skulls. I will never make fun of you for skulls again if you never sculpt another top knot on any model ever again.
Okay, hold on. His top knot is a wind gauge, okay? It's an item. It's a piece of war gear. He uses it so that, and if you look at the picture, that thing is just glorious in the wind. So he's able to gauge how the wind is moving. You know, but yeah, it's stupid. I would cut it off. I don't see any reason why you would keep it on the model. I think if you rotate around to the back, it's really not something that is going to hurt the model to just chop entirely.
Oh, yeah. No, it's not connected to armor or anything. Yeah. You chop it off. You'll need to do a little bit of green stuff work to create a mohawk mm-hmm. kind of hairstyle for him. But I mean, other than that, like I said, I think the pose is a little bit silly. The gun's proportions are... I just wish, for fuck's sakes, give me a sniper who's shooting a gun. Can we please once have a single sniper who is aiming his weapon?
Listen, the Vindicare
Vindicare
Assassin is aiming his weapon in one of his poses.
Okay, so you're saying that they peaked with the first sniper and it's just been downhill since
then?
They
peaked with the Rattling, who is also aiming his gun. No, I mean, there's other guys aiming guns, but really, yeah, I agree with you. Would be nice to see him in a little bit more of a dynamic pose, however... You know, I think that this is actually a really cool pose. I thought the sculptor did a great job in terms of the anatomy. He really did. You know, he's bending in all the right places, which sounds gross, but like, it's just, this is a well pose. But
this is the opposite of that Lore Master of Hoth, because the Lore Master of Hoth was in an unnatural pose. I mean, like, you're right. Like, if you look at this model and say he doesn't have a top knot and I can get over the pose, it fires on all cylinders. It really does. His rifle looks like a Ranger rifle. Again, his armor is great and it's really subdued. It doesn't have half the flash that we've come to expect from Games Workshop models.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's, you know.
And, you know, the overall winner of this model is that he's wearing essentially chaps. They're not chaps.
Oh, dude.
But they're pretty damn high.
Yeah, I was going to say.
High boots, straight on stripper boots.
Oh, no. Those are not boots at all. You can see them go over the boots. They're totally chaps. Assless at that.
I was right. They are chaps.
They are 100% chaps. And I do think that, you know, this is the first assless chaps model that Games Workshop has ever released. And you know what? I think that gets the Jaded Gamercast seal of approval.
It does. Actually, yes. And his rules are not bad either. So, you know, win-win in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, his rules aren't great, but I think what I like best about the Eldar Codex is that you're not compelled to max out your HQs, so when you're looking at it, you're just like, hey, I could take a couple units of Pathfinders, because you know what? Rangers with fucking Shrouded and, and Sharp Shot, which is the, sorry, I have to flip because it's referring to page. Oh, right, every single shot is a precision shot? Mm-hmm. That's huge.
Yep.
I mean, just being able to just be like, all right, my Rangers are, you know, my snipers are shooting at your squad. That's four hits. So that's going to be two on your sergeant, two on your last cannon. And you're like, yeah. Come on. So it's just like, his rules are great. 140 points is not bad. Unlike all the Phoenix Lords where you kind of look at it and you're like, 200 points, but I can get so much in this book for that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Seal of approval. Assless chaps. Good rules.
All right, so we're going to skip this week in hobby because, again, this is one of those shows that's probably going to run a bit long, but I don't think either of us did much of anything other than a couple of test models and this building.
I saw Into Darkness in IMAX 3D today.
Oh, yeah. I saw it a second time with Irina for our anniversary, so.
Yeah, it's so good.
It's good times. It's a good movie. Okay, so let's move on to the list building portion here. I'll go ahead and start us off and give the breakdown for what I've got on this list. It basically breaks down to a Farseer on a jet bike with both runes, a Spirit Seer. Those are my two HQs. For my troops, I've got 10 Eldar jet bikes, 3 Shurkin cannons. As well, I've got 10 Wraith Blades with axe and shield. For my fast attack, I've got 2 units of 10 Warp Spiders, no upgrades, a Crimson Hunter, no upgrades. For my heavy, I've got 2 Fire Prisms, no upgrades, and 3 Warwalkers. Believe it or not, no upgrades.
And really, you're keeping Shrieking Cannons.
I'm keeping it because when you add in the Star Engines and you add in the upgrades and all that kind of stuff, it's enough points that I'm sitting there going, you know what? I'd rather put that toward another full squad as opposed to finding myself with a half squad. So obviously my Farseer is going to go with the jet bikes. They're just going to kind of keep moving around the table, casting psychic powers and so on and so forth. Now, here's the interesting thing. I have 150 points left over after this. And so really, it's like I can take any one of my troop choices and, you know, essentially do like a full squad or do like a half squad or do a couple of things. Or I have no elites so far in this list. And so with 150 points, I can take various choices for my elites. You know, I can take a full 10-man squad of Howling Banshees and put the Spirit Seer in with them. Then they're running up the table with their 4+ save and then give them the you know, cast conceal on them every turn, you know?
Well, but the only thing with that is...
I'm not saying that's my choice.
No, I know. I was just saying you lose acrobatic with it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I am on, you know, I'm just not sold on any of the elites for the Eldar. I mean, I'm not saying they're bad, but it's just like, you know, when you look at Battle Focus, it as a rule is predominantly a shooting rule. I mean, for fuck's sakes, it is run and shoot in the same phase.
Right.
Which means that your Howling Banshees, your Striking Scorpions, and your Harlequins, two of those three actually, Harlequins are the junk choice. I think they are by far, you know, head and shoulders, the worst choice in this entire book. I think it's the only thing they failed on because The problem with Harlequins is that they are just trying to copy the rules verbatim that they came out with the old Eldar Codex.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like they came out with those rules, and then to not have, you know, cry unfair, they copied them for the Dark Eldar Codex, so they were just a little bit too expensive there. And then the Eldar got redone, and they kept the same rules, only they inexplicably nerfed the Shadow Seer and made his, instead of an always-on, made it a castable. So like I said, Harlequins are junk. Never take them. But, I mean, you look at your Banshees and your Scorpions. Why would you? Why would you take a combat unit when they do not benefit from battle focus?
Right.
You know, and I think that's the thing for me. So that's when you look at it and you're just like, you know what? Fire Dragons aren't bad, but at 22 points per model, now you need a delivery system to get those Meltaguns in.
And that's really the big thing is that, you know, at 110 points for five of them, I think that they're good if you want to take a big unit of them, put them in a Wave Serpent, you know, put a Farseer with them or whatever you want to do to fill that out. I don't think that they're a bad choice, but that has to be the army you're building, right?
Yeah.
They're not the thing that you're going to add a squad of five of them to sit at the back of the map, you know? Like, it's not something that's really going to work out for them. Striking Scorpions, again, we talked about this last episode.
Yeah.
They're just a bit too expensive. A bit out of place.
Although, one thing that I did notice that I'm just looking for... the Scorpion Claw is a Power Fist without Unwieldy.
Yeah, I know. I said that last episode.
Yeah.
Drunkenly arguing with me about how it was unwieldy. I'm like, no. It's not unwieldy at all. You're only strength six, not unwieldy at all.
Drunk? I don't know. I mean, striking Scorpions are okay, but again, 17 points. I really don't feel that combat units are the way to go. You personally, in your list, I would take more troops. You only have two.
Well, see, and that's the big thing, right? Like, I think any option that I have in the Elite's choice is always going to be kind of paling in comparison to either 15 Guardians or 10 Dire Avengers.
10 Rangers is 120 points.
Or 10 Rangers.
Or even
5 Wraith Guard because I've got the Spirit Seer, right? So, I mean, the problem is that, yes, I want another scoring unit. I don't need another thing that's going to be moving up the table and shooting in short range. So Rangers are probably the better option. But if I just want more bodies on the table... Nothing wrong with regular ass Guardian Defenders, right? So, I mean, likely what I would be doing is going with the 10 Rangers. That was kind of the thing I was leaning towards for 120 points. And then likely would be spending the additional points on, what was I going to be doing? Just random, like, war gear and shit.
Dude,
you know, like upgrades. At that point.
For your Warwalkers and there's 30 points.
That's what I was going to say. At that point, I would buy the Star Engines. Is that what they're called? Star Engines?
Star Engines for the +3 inches of run?
Yes, and that's what I would be doing, is I would be buying the Star Engines as opposed to upgrading to the Scatter Lasers or something like that. Because again, it's not... Okay, let's talk about the Warwalkers. It's not an issue of the cost, obviously, because they're only 5 points per upgrade, right? So it's not that big of a deal. 10 points per model, it's who cares? Really what it comes down to is that I mean, you and I talked about this during the week. I think, you know, Scatter Lasers are very good. Averaging between three Warwhackers. I used to play bass for Warwhackers. But the big thing about Warwhackers with Scatter Lasers...
You thought tweets from my colon was a weird when they were playing live. God, Warwhackers were just... Dude, like, they gave ponchos for the front row. It was disgusting.
Hello, Country Stan. We are War... Classing the joints up, my friends. All right, so yes, Warwalkers. You know, what you would average out was about between three of them with two apiece. It was 19 strength six AP6 hits per turn, which is huge. The 36-inch range is really nice. I just found that the 25-point upgrade per model, 75 points total, was a bit much when I start looking at it. And like I said, looking at other squads, looking at other things that I do with my list, that would have stopped me from getting that 10-man unit of Rangers. And so the 10-man unit of Rangers, I feel, is going to add a lot of utility to my list, and it's going to be really helpful. However, in this particular case, I didn't feel like I needed more hits. I felt like I needed more killing. And so I went with Bladestorm. One less shot, 12 inches less range, but if I'm giving them the Star Engines for the extra 3-inch run, that's not so much of a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's still 12 shots from that unit that have the chance to rend at strength 6 AP 5. Well,
it'd be 18 because you're getting 3 per, or 6 per guy.
Yes, that's right. Sorry, I thought they were, I'm thinking star cannons with two shots. Yes,
you are.
Exactly, right? So
no, but I mean, see,
it's comparable. I think the killing, you're going to get more killing out of it than you would out of the star cannons, and that's it.
Well, I mean, honestly, though, it's just like what I like about the Warwalkers and what I look at them as being in any list, because I think that, like, you know, I mean, I know last week I was all just like, oh, three fire prisms. You know, but over the week I've had a chance to look at it, and I really do believe that a single unit of three Warwalkers is where it's at. And what you need to do is you need to look at it and say, where is my list weak? So yeah. Your list realistically has one unit of jet bikes and mm-hmm. two units of warp spiders to mm-hmm. deal with infantry
yep.
at range. So having the Shuriken cannons on your Warwalkers is really helping to yep. fill in a gap.
Yeah, and that was my
answer. Because the other thing is realistically, you want your warp spiders to be shooting at tanks almost all the time to be getting right. the strength 7.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just like you want to jump them into rear armor, unload a fuckload of strength 7, and tear a tank apart.
Exactly.
So they're going to be dealing with your light armor. In the list that I have, I've got fuckloads more Shuriken than you do. So
oh, yeah.
For me...
Well, that was your goal, right? Like, that was you blade storming the shit out of stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
Kind of, we have very similar lists, but what it really came down to was, you know, the only thing I had to deal with troops was, yeah, like you said, my jet bikes, my warp spiders. And the warp spiders will do a pretty decent job, and they rend as well.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not going to be enough to really make the difference. So it was, I needed something that's going to be doing a lot on the battlefield for next to nothing, and 180 points is cheap as shit for three of those. Which and that was the big thing, is it's just like, that's dirt cheap.
Well, especially when you consider the fact that it's like, this is a unit that has battle focus, they have fleet, they have scouts, and they have a 5-up invulnerable at all times. So it's just like, they're a slippery unit, because I mean, if you get a good piece of line of sight blocking terrain, realistically, you're able to move 6, unload your shots, and then run back in. Star Engines right. guarantees that you should always get back into position. I mean, obviously, without them, you have the chance of not getting in. But it's basically old school Tau tactics, and I think that's what I really like about, you know, about Battle Focus and the Eldar now is you can borrow a lot of those mobility tactics from other armies, namely the Tau, because they were the first with jetpacks to do that whole. You can't see me. I jump in front of the forest. I rapid fire your face off. I jump behind the forest. You can't see me. So, I mean, like, you do have the freedom to do something like that. Your Warwalkers are highly mobile. They got a ton of shots.
Yeah.
And they're slippery to catch.
Yeah. So, yep, but, there's my list. So, Nathan, run us through what you got there.
All right. So, mine is basically a same hand. Eldar list. So yeah. Lots of jet bikes, lots of mobility, and that was really what I was focusing on. So for my HQ, I have a single Autarch who is riding a jet bike. He also has a Mantle of the Laughing God.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the one that's called. Yeah, Mantle of yep. the Laughing God, a fusion gun, and a laser lance. Now, what I love about this guy is he is 145 points, so he is dirt cheap.
Yep.
He, anytime he moves on his jet bike, will have a rerollable 2+ cover save at all times, which is fucking outrageously good.
Mm-hmm.
He is ballistic skill 6 with a melta gun. He has a laser lance, and he also has hit and run. So basically, you know, hide him, because I mean, how hard is it to hide a single model? Because I mean, Mantle of the Laughing God makes him no longer an independent character, so he has to be on his own. But he's got a 3+ save, a 2+ rerollable 2+ cover save at all times, other than the top of turn 1. So I just got to hide him from line
of
sight.
Or in combat when he has a 3+.
Yeah, or in combat when he still has his 3+ armor save. So it's just like, I got to hide him, and then I'm going to move and turbo boost all up in someone's face. And they really have to deal with him. And that's what I really like about him, is he's this, you know, he's this annoying little fucker that if I lose, I could give a fuck because he's 145 points.
Right.
But if you don't deal with him, he can just zip up and blow a Land Raider up.
Yeah.
Easily. You know, so it's just like, you know, I love him. I think he's great. Not to mention the fact that he gives my army path of strategy, which lets me modify my reserve rolls up and down. So if I'm going second and you get both your flyers out, means that on the top of two, both of my flyers come out on a 2+. So
yeah.
huge stuff. Yeah. It also makes outflanking Warwalkers really, really good because, again, on a 2+, I'm in side armor, blowing up tanks. So he was my only HQ. After that, I took four identical jet bike squads, all 9 strong with 3 Shuriken cannons. And like I said, I just love it because the Eldar jet bike combined with battle focus means that you will never catch that unit and engage them in combat. You have to shoot them down, and they're still toughness 4 with a 3-up save. So it's basically like dealing with 4 tactical squads.
Yeah, and they all have jink. They're still bikes, right?
Well, and that's exactly it. Is I still have a 5+ cover save anytime I move. I can go flat out and get a 4+ cover save. You know, and being an Eldar jet bike, I can move flat out, which gives me 3 feet to get across the board and either claim or contest objectives. So mobility I have in spades. I've got a mountain of shooting because, I mean, I basically have 6 twin-linked striking catapults on every unit of bikes along with the 3 cannons. So I've got fuckloads of blade storm. I'm going to be hitting tons, rending tons. So I do not care about infantry. I don't care if you're Terminators or orcs.
Yeah.
I've got you covered.
Well, that's the idea, right? Getting in close and really shredding units in that short range fight. You know, it's one of the things we don't see often enough in 40K in my mind, you know.
Yeah.
It's the way that I play my Necrons, and I have, you know, pretty good success with it. Again, my Necrons aren't even the best army in the world.
Yeah.
But it's one of those armies where no, you get right up in their face and you sit in close and shoot. You don't ever charge. You always stay at your max range. And that's the game that you play, right? Where if they want to charge you, they either have to hope for a long ass fucking charge or they're just going to get shot to pieces. And again, every time they charge you, especially on jet bikes, and this is one of the things that I think makes them so interesting with Battle Focus, is you're still going to snapshot and you still have twin linked and it's still rending. Like, it's just, that's such a good unit to have on the table where even charging them is a daunting prospect.
Yeah, but I mean, even then, realistically, I mean, if I'm able to use my 12-inch movement, my bike movement, to get all of my guns in range, I now have 3d6 worth of fallback distance. So if I'm able to just line you up at 12 inches, I'm going to open up, I'm going to kill your front inch or two, I'm going to run away 3d6, which statistically speaking means 10 inches back. So now I'm a good 2 feet away from you. I'm literally nowhere near you. So that's what I really, really like about it is I'm you know, I have 4 units. They're throwing out a ton of hurt to anything that isn't a tank. I also have the mobility that if I need to, I can pull rear armor on tanks, in which case each unit has 9 strength 6 shots.
Yep.
So I can still do some good damage versus light armor. And realistically, if I'm on my game and I'm playing smart, you know, and I'm using pre-measuring to my advantage and making sure that I'm not moving too close or doing something stupid, you should never ever complete a charge against me, even if you're rolling boxcars. It shouldn't happen. And that's what I really, really like about it. As I said,
you got to back them into a corner, right?
Yes, and that's exactly it. You have to cut me off and hope that I don't sacrifice a turn of shooting to turbo boost away.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly, right?
You know, but so like I said, I really like them, and that's why I was looking at same hand. Because, I mean, when I was trying to come up with a list, wasn't really feeling the Dire Avengers, not at 13 points per model. Guardian Defenders, I was really trying to do a whole lot of lists with them, but I mean, a 12-inch range on a toughness 3 unit means that I'd run in, I get one outstanding round of shooting, and then your 4 or 5 Marines would charge me and break me and run me down. And I was just like, fuck, this is not good. So I really like the Windrider jet bikes. I think that they are the best troops choice, bar none. Because, I mean, I talked about how you don't really want combat, and so that's kind of why Storm Guardians fall apart.
Yeah, sure.
Rangers are good to camp, but I mean, you know, like I said, the jet bikes are phenomenal, especially when each of those units is only 183 points. So I'm spending less than 200 points for basically 9 Space Marines, you know, in terms of trying to kill them, with an outstanding amount of firepower. Right. After that, I skipped over elites, went straight into fast attack, where I took two Crimson Hunters, and I took a unit of 10 Warp Spiders, no upgrades. Again, kind of the no-brainer thing. I like. I have been saying for all of 6th edition that the best defense versus flyers is other flyers, and the Crimson Hunter is a anti-aircraft flyer. So for me, taking two is a no-brainer. I also like the Autarch, because if I end up going first, which is actually something I don't ever want, to be honest, is if I'm playing this list, I'm going to try to take second turn every time. But it's just like, if I go first, I at least have my Autarch to try to keep both my Crimson Hunters in reserve, so that they don't fly out on an you know, empty sky and then get shot down by Vendettas and shit like that. Warp Spiders, because they're probably the best unit in the book. And then Heavy Support, I have the same thing as you, 2 Fire Prisms, 3 Warwalkers, but mine are double scatter lasers, and I dropped the star engines because 85 points per was kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, and that's really all it came down to. For a 10-point model, especially if you're going with the scatter lasers with the 36-inch range, there's no reason to run. You know, you're going to run backwards, and that's what's nice about them, being able to bounce out of range. But really, that's all it comes down to. But when you're at 36 inches, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's the big thing is I mean, the star engines are fun.
Is drink it,
woo! But 45 points for the 3 of them is just a whole lot of points, especially when that is the difference between just taking a Farseer on foot or taking that Autarch build that I had. And again, the other thing is
woo! Ha
ha! I am getting people liquored up this episode. But the other.
Absolutely.
Ah! Is. All right, everyone. If you are playing the drinking game, I need you to pause, call 911.
Call 911. And
a family member, so you can explain to them why you have alcohol poisoning at 11 o'clock in the morning. No, but I mean, it's just 85 points is a ton. I'm already paying 70 per model, which I'm okay with because 210 points. It does make them, bar none, the most expensive unit in
that list.
The extra
30 points is not the end of the world when you're talking about, like you said, adapting to that hole in your list.
Yeah, and that's what it is with the 2 Fire Prisms and 2 Crimson Hunters, I am solid for anti-heavy armor, especially when you add in the Autarch with the Meltagun. So it's just like, if you've got a Land Raider or a Monolith or a couple Lehman Russes, I don't care. I've got the bang in my list to deal with those threats. What is really going to give me trouble without the Warwalkers, and I think even with, but to a lesser extent, is going to be an all mech'd up list. So if you've got 6 to 10 Chimeras or Rhinos or Razorbacks or whatever, that is something that my list is going to struggle to deal with, because dirt cheap pillboxes are hard. What I love about the unit of Warwalkers with the scatter lasers is, again, 19 statistical hits at strength 6 means that statistically I will pull 3 or more hull points versus every armor 10, 11, or 12 vehicle on, you know, that I shoot at.
Right. And that includes flyers. You're almost always going to knock 1 or 2 off a flyer if you're firing an entire unit of those into them.
Yeah, but I mean, realistically, with the 2 Crimson Hunters, I shouldn't.
You don't need to, right? But they may not be on the table.
Yeah, well, I mean, or they could have been shot down, or, you know, definitely, it's nice to have a little bit of redundancy all around, but yeah, so, I mean, that's my list. Honestly, I the more I've just been like, I think this is the list that I want to take a mini break from fantasy and paint up. I mean, shit, I bought a Crimson Hunter today after Star Trek, so I could go and bust out my airbrush and look at painting some Eldar tanks with only my airbrush.
I swear, you go Mr. Roboto at 40 minutes every time in every episode. It makes editing a pain in the ass.
Thanks, Skype.
Oh my god. It's like, without fail, you'll randomly cut out at about 40 minutes. I don't know. Fuck Skype. Anyways.
Thanks, Skype.
Yeah, I think your list is definitely one of those ones that is going to be hard for a lot of people to deal with, and the bikes are the crux of that. They are going to stop a lot of people kind of dead in their tracks. And the sheer weight of anti-infantry fire is really going to do a number on, you know, standard lists. I would say balanced lists are really going to get torn to shreds by this. I think if you're playing a true horde, you know, orcs, tyranids, even well, to a lesser extent, guard. Let's say to a lesser extent, guard.
Well, thankfully, no one has discovered that pure infantry shooting guard are probably the single most broken list in 40K.
Yeah.
But since Bell of Lost Souls has not been preaching it, no one has figured that out yet. So thankfully, we don't have to deal with that bullshit.
That's what I mean, to a lesser extent.
Yeah. Well, because I mean, like, you remember, I came up with that infantry guard. It was almost like, at 1850, it was almost like 200 guys. I had like 30 autocannons, and I was just like, I cannot see a way that this list loses.
Right.
I'm just like, I just can't, because I would table everything in two shooting phases. Like, I just have too many models, and they're too many guns. And I was just like, this would be the single most boring thing to build and paint and play. Mm-hmm. Turn one, I don't move. I shoot. Turn two, I think I don't move.
For your list, armies with a lot of combat infiltrators are gonna hurt you, just because they're gonna box you in that much faster. I mean, you're gonna be able to turn and fire. I mean, the big thing with that list is that by turn four, you will know if you've won.
Yeah.
Because if they have you in combat at turn four, and you know that right now, and at that point there's no escape, you know you've got the game. Whereas if by turn four that they haven't caught you in combat yet, you know at that point that it's all about turbo boosting to objectives now.
Yeah.
Well, and getting into position. So
honestly, when I think about it, I do think that the two list builds that are going to give me trouble are going to be pretty much any Tau build. Because Tau are not going to try to run and catch me.
No.
It makes battle focus redundant. I mean, honestly, the only use battle focus is to dance into my 12-inch weapon range and then get the fuck out of their rapid fire range, which is 15. You know? Otherwise, like I said, I'm not really getting a lot of use out of battle focus as a rule, because I'm not trying to avoid Tau's charges. So they're just a bad matchup. And especially if they've got something like one or two Riptides with missile, you know, shield missile drones or whatever they're called.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because again, those are just tough fucking models.
But if they're playing the missile pod broadside squad, that's going to hurt. And that is your target number one.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, thankfully though, they have a 2+ save. But I've got so much rending out there that I can. Yeah. I think I should be able to drop it in one good solid round of shooting, but I have to give them two before I'll get there. So, I mean, like I said, Tau are a bad match, and I recognize that. Yeah. And I think that's mostly why people generally, like the people that are giving Eldar a bad review or a bad rep, are people that look at it and they're just like, but they can't beat Tau. You know, because you know what? Tau have almost all of the advantages in a Tau versus Eldar fight.
Right.
You know,
well,
so
unless you go mech'd up Eldar.
Yes.
Even then, that it's up to the dice. Right? If you're playing mech'd up Eldar and you're taking a bunch of wave serpents and you have fire prisms and you take let's say you take two units of 10 Dark Reapers even on top of that, right? It's all coming down to the dice, and the dice might be with you. And if they're with you, you'll get in there, you'll hit them, you'll attack them. You know, you'll drop out those squads of Wraithblades, those 6-man squads of Wraithblades out of Wave Serpents, and they'll get in there and just rip the army to shreds. But at the same time, we all know that you still have to deal with the supporting fire. You still have to deal with all of those different things that are going to happen in the Tau list. So your best bet is literally you have to hit them three units at a time. You can't send one guy in at a time. So you would have to be dedicated to that one specific strategy. I think even with the list that you have built there, I think with Tau, you could definitely have it go your way unless you have a Tau list built like the Tau list you built. And I think that's what's clouding your judgment a little bit, is you're thinking of Tau in the list where you're just like, 58 Fire Warriors, woo!
Look,
but most people are not playing.
Listen,
that.
Son. If you're to, this is a Jada Gamercast public service announcement. If you play Tau and you do not have 72 Fire Warriors, you're not allowed to play Tau anymore. Like, seriously, just shelf your fucking army because you're too inbred to figure the list out.
Get off your soapbox, asshole.
No, but seriously,
we talked
though,
about this in the Tau episode.
Anyways. I know, but they're so cheap.
I know.
Anyway, but no, like I said, it's just Tau in general are going to be a bad matchup because even, you know, even then, like, you've got all sorts of other things. Like, you can have Crisis Suits running double fusion or double plasma rifles. You can have Riptides, which are going to be hard to bring down. You've got, if anyone takes a five-man Piranha Squadron, ugh.
Right.
You know, it's just a ridiculous amount of firepower. So like I said, I think Tower, bad matchup. The only other bad matchup for my specific Eldar list is, as I said before, all mounted, all mechanized something, be it Marines, Chaos Marines, Guard.
Well, like I was saying, I think...
Oddly enough, if Tau mount up, I'm golden.
You're like, in great shape.
Yeah, because it's just like, oh, you're spending all those points on your Devilfish? Woo, I win!
I still think you're going to have a hard time against, like, a pure horde. Like, not even Fire Warriors, 72 Fire Warriors, but, like, we were talking about, like, 150 to 200 models on the table. Like, yes, you have a lot of anti-infantry, but that's just, you're not going to be killing enough infantry to really deal. Like, we're talking horde that fills the full six-foot table edge, right?
Maybe, like, but again, I'm mobile enough that I can use those numbers against them, because I think you forget that I have played that list. I've played hordes that span 6 feet
right.
of edges, and I know how they are strong and I know how they are weak, and I think that were I to run into an army like that, I could use its numbers against it in much the same way that when I would lose playing it, good canny generals would. So I'm honestly not too worried about it because, again, I pump out almost 150, 200 shots a turn.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, I'm not super worried about it, you know, whether it's Gazgul in the Green Tide or whether it's... Mm-hmm. I was going to say no Tyranid army actually plays a Horde anymore, so that's that one's out.
No, and again, if they bring monstrous creatures, you're laughing.
Well, right. Yeah, because, I mean, Bladestorm auto wounds on a 6 and drops the AP to 2.
Right.
So, if they try to Nidzilla me, I'll tear them apart.
It'll shred them. For my list that I have got here, Farseer Jet Bike Rune, Spirit Seer, 10 Jet Bikes, 10 Wraith Blades, Axe Shield, 10 Rangers, 10 Warp Spiders, 10 Warp Spiders, Crimson Hunter, Fire Prism, 3 Warwalkers with Shuriken Cannons. You know, I think the big issue for this list will be Tau more so than you. I think that
you have less bodies and you also have less toughness.
Yeah, less toughness, less bodies. I think the Wraith Blades, with Conceal on them walking up the table, that's going to be the unit that's going to be taking the brunt of the fire. And I think that's going to kind of be the saving grace for my Warp Spiders. It's going to allow the Warp Spiders to get into position to just destroy every vehicle he has on the table. And the Warwalkers will be getting into position to just rip through the infantry like it's paper, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that the Jet Bikes will be doing basically the same thing. I think the Psychic Powers are really going to be useful in my list. I mean, you don't have any in yours. And, I mean, we kind of talked about this a little bit, and you weren't 100% sold on the Farseer, but I think, you know... When you look at just rerolls in general.
Well, I mean, the only reason because I looked at it long and hard, though. I don't really need a Farseer because almost all of my shooting is twin-linked. Realistically, the only unit in my army that benefits from guide are my Warp Spiders. Because the Warwalkers will have half their shots twin-linked with target lock.
Right.
All of my Jet Bikes have twin-linked Shuriken Catapults, so throwing Guide out to just get my 9 Shuriken Cannon shots twin-linked is kind of a waste for a 100-point model.
Yeah.
So I looked at that. Obviously, Fortune is great. Obviously, Doom is even better, but being random rolls, they're less reliable.
Yeah.
And as much as I wanted Conceal, you know, the problem was is I could take 3 Warlocks on Jet Bikes in order to give 3 units Conceal, or I could take a whole 4th unit. And I just did not feel that a 3-plus cover save, because remember, they have Jane.
You weren't going to save 9 Jet Bikes with Conceal. That's what it came down to.
Yes.
That's all it came down
to. The extra shooting was better. And that's the only reason why when I looked at...
I'm not even talking about Warlocks.
Well, no, I know, but I was just, like I said, the Farseer, again, we talked about it. You want Doom, Fortune, and Guide. Those are the only 3, or rather, those are the 3 outstanding, amazing in every situation spells. And because only one of them was a guarantee and it does practically nothing for my army list, that was why I thought having a harassment autarch fit my list better.
Oh, yeah, and I see that as well. I think in the list that I have there, considering that Tau are Initiative 3, right?
Initiative 2, aren't they?
Yeah, well, less than 3 is all that matters for Warp Spiders. Yeah, it is. So for Warp Spiders, I mean, they're hitting at Strength 7, so that means that, you know, the guys with the higher toughness are getting ripped, you know, like, just pretty much everything I'm able to take out. They are going to just destroy Riptides. And I think that that's kind of the hilarious bit, you know, coming in at strength 7. I think the Riptide's only initiative 1 or 2 again.
Sorry, I'm looking for you. Yeah, he's initiative 2. So you'd be wounding him on 3s with 6s being your
AP2.
Your AP2, which is good because he's got that 2 plus. But no, like I said, Riptides, especially when they've got the...
And that's why I wanted the powers. And again, I'm not even going for Doom. Because I'm primarily still a shooting army. I threw the Wraithblades in there because I think that they're so damn good for the points. With the axe and the shield, you know, toughness 6 with a 4+ invulnerable save and a 3+ save. When I do run up against an army like Tau, they're going to be the primary target. Because they will soak up so much firepower. And he has to kill him to the last man. Because even if like 2 get in there, I'm going to win that fight.
Yeah.
Right. And they're fearless, so they'll just keep slugging away. So, I mean, like it changes the target priority of my list so dramatically that I think that that's really what is going to do it for that list in terms of counteracting the type of army that's going to be bad for them. However, again, like I said before, the big horde is going to be a very hard hard time for me.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have a hard time against the really heavy mech'd list. I think that because I've got so much strength 7 with the Warp Spiders, I can deal with that many Chimeras where you might not be able to quite so much.
Well, I mean,
but really, it's the dice. If the dice are good, I'll win it.
Yeah, well, that's inherently the issue with those big heavy mech lists is it's not so much of can you deal with it, because any list can, given enough time. It's can you deal with it and get lucky on the return fire.
Right.
You know, and that's why, honestly, I think Razorback spam is something which has thankfully fallen out of favor, but it's just like, it's far more dangerous to Eldar players than Chimera spam, because at least Chimeras still have to deal with the fact that they're not twin-linked and they have Guardsmen ballistic skills. Like, I have literally in tournaments had a single Moloch eat every gun from a Leafblower list and walk away with a wound left.
Right.
You know, because it's just like, look, your ballistic skill 3, sometimes it's going to happen where you're just not going to do it. So it's just like, hey, you know, and when that happens, I know I've won because I ate an entire guard army of shooting and I lost nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, I got this game in the bag. Like, you know, that's right. Such a handicap to them when guard like Tau, although less now that they have supporting fire, are always fighting that uphill battle of, can I do enough damage to you before you hit combat?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's always the thing with mech armies. I think that your list versus guard, as long as they're not super ordnance heavy, you should be fine. It's ordnance, I think, that's going to be tough for you to deal with. But even then,
it's cover, it's movement.
Yeah, I mean, it's cover, it's movement. But I mean,
spreading out, so on and so forth.
The other thing is he going to fuck up his target priority? Because I mean, you still have 2 fire prisms. You've got your war walkers, which can drop a chimera in a pinch. Especially again, you know, you run into all mech guard. You know, okay, they outflank,
right?
Because at least they're going to be pulling side and rear armors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just like you do have enough. So the question then becomes, what's his target priority? Is he going to be shooting the wrong things? Is he going to be too scared of your Fire Prism's Strength 9 AP1 Lance that he's going to let your Warp Spiders get into 12 and demolish tanks?
Right.
Right? So, yeah. You know, your list is good. Honestly, I look at your list and I think the only issue that you may have is you only have 3 scoring units.
Yeah.
However, they are all very tough to kill.
Yeah.
Because you've got infiltrating rangers with stealth, you've got toughness 6, 3+, 4+ with conceal, and you've got toughness 4, 3+, 5 plus Vikes.
Right.
So just like, you do have that going for you, where what few troops you have are very resilient. But I think that a canny general will target priority all of your troops down and beat you on objectives.
Right, yeah, depending on the scenario, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And that's exactly it. Okay, so there are lists. I mean, there's definitely more that you can do with this book. And as I was building this list, one of the things I kept thinking was, you know, I do want to build a list around Striking Scorpions. And I do want to try to build a list around this. And it has nothing to do with the fact that, oh, I think it's going to be the best thing in the world. It's just the possibilities are there.
Well,
and you kind of keep going back and looking at things like Wave Serpents and going, Wave Serpents are good.
Wave Serpents are great.
Like, really, I need to be taking advantage of Wave Serpents. And then you start stopping thinking like, okay, how do I take advantage of Wave Serpents? Like, what's really going to make this list work best for me if I'm really going hard on Wave Serpents? And you kind of keep going back and forth on different ideas for building the list around. Like you said about the Dark Reapers. 2 units of 10 Dark Reapers. That's fucking crazy. Build your list around Dark Reapers, right? Put Warlocks in with them. Oh, no, you can't put Warlocks in with them. Right.
No, you can't.
You can't. But you can put like a Farseer, Spirit Seers in.
You can put
a
Spirit Seer in. Yeah. No, but I mean like...
Like Dark Reapers and Wraithguard, and that's your whole list? Like, that'd be fucking crazy.
I think what I really, really like about this list, about the Eldar Codex in general, what I really, really like about it is, I mean, I'm an old school gamer. I remember the Craft World Eldar Codex. And with that being said, that was such an unbalanced piece of shit book. Oh my god, like, I hate it where it'd just be like, oh, you play a Laetok? Good game. I can't win.
Nope.
You know, because it had such balance issues. However, you can build every one of those craft worlds in here.
Yep.
You can build an Ulfwey force, because, I mean, what made Ulfwey special? Well, they used a lot of Guardians and Warwalkers that were Ballistic Skill 4. Well, guess what? They all are now.
Yeah.
So you can run an effective Ulfwey list where you're using Guardian Defenders, Storm Guardians, Warwalkers, all of those things to just create this sort of horde of Eldar. Because the other thing is, when you look at it, I actually was going to say is, but I caught myself that
It would time. Be the sixth time this episode, so
it's true.
I've refilled my glass 3 times due to that.
I was going to say... You could take 20 Guardians for 180 points. So you could, realistically, for about 1,100 points, you know, 1,000 points, 1,100 points, take 120 Guardians in a list. And remember, Guardian Defenders have Blade Storms. You can give them Scatter Lasers, Bright Lances, Star Cannons, Shuriken Cannons. You have all of these options. So it's just like, you want an Ulfwey army? Bam, done. You want an Laetok army? Take Illic Nightspear. Take 6 units of 10 Pathfinders, which would just be a despicable amount of actually effective snipers, because they would have Shrouded and Stealth, so that's 2 plus cover save in every piece of cover with Sharpshot, times 60 guys. And that's only, what, 800 points?
Lang, not math.
Yeah, but I mean, with Illic Nightspear, you're spending less than 1,000 points to max out your troops on Pathfinders.
Well, and that's the big thing I was getting at.
So it's just like, you can do an effective same hand, because that was what I was looking at doing. You can build an effective Laetok.
Yeah.
You can build an effective Ulfwey list. What's the name of the aspect? What's the name of the all aspect craft world? The, I can't remember. But the other one that goes heavy aspect warriors, take Dire Avengers for your troops, take 2 or 3 units of Striking Scorpions, take the Dark Reapers, take all of these things, and you look at it, and none of those lists are bad. And I think that's what I really appreciate about this Eldar Codex. Is it an obviously powerful book? No. You know, when you were reading the Tau book, when I was reading the Tau Codex, I was looking at it and I was going, holy shit, this book is fucking great. It's powerful.
Is it Bail-Tan?
Bail-Tan, that's the one. Nice. Well,
Jessica Bail-Tan.
Jessica Bail-Tan, yeah.
That's right.
You know, so it's just like, you can build a Bail-Tan list and it's going to be good. And going back to what I was saying before you interrupted me with Jessica Bail-Tan, when you were reading the Tau
Jessica Codex, Bail-Tan interrupts us all, Nathan.
I know. God, you just can't you just can't focus on anything.
Nope.
You know, you look at it and you're like, holy shit, look at supporting fire. Look at the fact that my whole army has it. Look at what Riptides can do and look how tough they are. And, you know, and you just look at that book and you're just like, this is a powerful book. I can build a Tau list, I can take it to a tournament, and I will do well. Because it has every option it needs for every situation. The Eldar book, on the other hand, when I look at it, it is very much a general's book. Like, to me, like, when I look at it, you know, nothing is obviously powerful. But then you start to go under the surface, and you're just like, holy shit, look at these things. Because, I mean, realistically, again, if we're going to talk 1850, I could take the an Eletok list that has, like I said, 60 Pathfinders with Illich Nightspear in there. It's less than 1,000 points. That's still enough points for me to grab a pair of Crimson Hunters, 10 Warp Spiders, and 2 or 3 Fire Prisms.
Right.
Holy shit. Yeah. Like, that is, like, it's just, it's an obscene amount of shooting.
And like I said, even when you look at something like taking, you know, a Spirit Seer for your HQ, and then just going hardcore with Wraith Guard, Wraith Knights, and Dark Reapers. And just let that be your army, right? Everything's got a big save. Everything's got ridiculous amounts of shooting in combat. Everything is super tough. Everything is going to be, yep, you know, a pain in the ass for you to deal with. I mean, dealing with one unit of it, well, it's like talking about playing the All Terminator list, right? That's the situation that you're putting your opponent into, except that these are toughness 6 Terminators, right? Yep. Like, it's,
well, and the other thing is if you do if you do want to go with a full, you know what, I need more gin. Maybe I'll say it more then.
I'm running out of whiskey because of you, you fuck.
That's the point. But I mean, if you do want to take an Eandon list, that's the one where you're just like, you know what, I've got my 3 Wraith Knights, and I've got Wraith Guard and Wraith Blades all on Wave Serpents, all small units, so that way I can max out on them. And again, you look at that and you're just like, holy shit, that would be an incredibly difficult list to deal with because of the toughness factor. Sure, it's a small list, you know, maybe twice as big as a Drago Wing.
Yeah.
Not that Drago Wing was ever very good. But holy shit, I mean, could you imagine trying to clear 3 Wraith Knights off the table?
Right, and you know, that's what we were talking about at the top of the podcast, right? Is just, you kind of look at it and you go, yeah, you could make it work. You know, there's always something there that's going to allow you to make it work. And I think that that's even what I kind of like. Even Swooping Hawks. You want to make a list around Swooping Hawks? You can do it. You know, you can absolutely do it. And Swooping Hawks have their place. But really, it's like we said before, there are some standouts. They're the ones that really make you think. And I think that that's what I like so much about the Eldar book. I think you and I are both in agreement that it is something that has kind of drawn out a bit of love for 40K between the two of us. You really are 100% considering getting this Eldar army done, which I think is awesome. And really all it did for me was make me go, yeah, you know what? I got to get this this Necron list done. And then I revamp my Necron list and I'm sitting there looking at it going like, this is a strong list. Yeah, you know, I'm pretty happy with this list. So,
you know, again, the thing with me though I am gonna try
if Liquor.
You know, I wish. You know, I think next week we should try to go for a Sunday, and I will try to get you to finish that fucking
bottle. I know. I'm gonna have to buy another bottle for next week. But I know what I'm naming this episode.
Is. yeah, go for it. But the thing is, I had a Dark Eldar army list that I converted well before the Dark Eldar were redone. So rather than painting the shitty Dark Eldar models for, I think, a fourth time, I converted the entire army out of Guardians. And so it's just like, I love the way that the list looks. It painted super fast. I mean, it's not winning any painting awards since all of the Guardians were just like dry brushed. Dry brushed plus highlights equals done.
Oh.
You know, so it's just like, it looked nice. I really like the aesthetic, which was these dark, kind of sinister looking Eldar Guardians. And when the Dark Eldar Codex came out, I just wasn't really inspired to add in and kind of move on with that aesthetic and keep with it because I liked the new Dark Eldar model so much. That I really wanted to start again, but I didn't want to start again because I think I'd finished the army list like 6 months before the Dark Eldar were redone. So I said it just kind of put me at this point where I didn't really want to continue it. This Eldar release, though, makes me want to play that list as Eldar, because, I mean, almost all of my conversions are predominantly Eldar. So just, like, I like the idea that I can continue this list. I can play them as Eldar because they have that look. And, again, fuck me, I love Battle Focus. You know, and it's funny how we've had two codexes in a row that have come out with this one innocuous little special rule. Because, you know what, when I read Battle Focus, I thought, okay, but what's the point? And it wasn't until you're reading through, you're looking at the guns, you're looking at the weapons, that you're just like, oh, I get it. I see how brilliant this rule is. Because, you know, it's just like I can run and then shoot, or shoot and then run. You just don't see it until you really start to look at the whole list.
Well, here,
and you really start to look at everything that has it. And that's when it kind of clicks.
Well, here's the interesting bit, is that we had talked about in 6th edition that shooting armies really were kind of going away for the most part, just because of the fact that, you know, there was, yes, you got snapshot, but because charge ranges were this and that and blah, 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 shooting armies were, you know, not going to be the end all be all. The leaf blower wasn't going to be the end of the game. Like, you know, combat armies still had the opportunity to make things work now. And, you know, because of that, people looked at Tau and they were just like, well, how in the hell are Tau going to win? And they looked at Eldar and they thought to themselves, well, right, but Eldar, you have to go close combat. Like, you have to play Storm Guardians. You have to do this, that, and the other thing to make them work. Which does make me ask the question, do you think that Phil Kelly, who wrote the Eldar and the Dark Eldar, do you think that Phil Kelly was given essentially a green light to come up with some really creative rules once 6th edition kicked in? Because, you know, we saw him, he did the Dark Eldar book. And, right? He did Dark Eldar?
Yeah, he absolutely
did. He did Dark Eldar. And again, like, he did the whole, like, pain token thing. And it didn't mean shit. Nobody gave a shit. But it wasn't anything like this, right? I think as soon as 6th edition came around, everyone was like, listen, the gates are open. Make it interesting. Add to the game. Make army mechanics be unique as opposed to units be unique. You know, because for the longest time, from way back when we started playing, that was the only difference between armies, was this army has this stat line, this army has this stat line, this army has this gun, this army has this gun. Now, there's so much stuff out there that every army essentially has every gun and every unit type that every other army does.
Yeah.
So it's more of an issue of, you know, let's get a special rule that applies to the entire army that really does make them stand out, right? And make them play a certain way. Do you think that it was 6th edition that really kind of opened those gates?
Maybe. Honestly, I think it has more to do with Warhammer Fantasy Battles than it does to have with 6th edition. Mm-hmm. Because it's something that we saw with High Elves. Realistically, I mean, for years, for as long as I've been in this hobby, High Elves and Dark Elves have been identical in terms of army lists, except one was painted white, one was painted black, and you just changed the names on shit. It was painful. Then you got the Always Strikes First, you know, you got Speed of Assyrian as a special rule, and you got Hatred as a special rule for Dark Elves, which was starting to deviate them. And it wasn't until this new High Elf book, when we got Martial Prowess combined with army-wide Always Strikes First, where you looked at it and you said, holy shit, my High Elf army is a different army than my Dark Elf army.
Right.
Right? And you saw that with 40K between Eldar and Dark Eldar as well. You know, because realistically, Eldar and Dark Eldar were the exact same army, except that Dark Eldar were slightly faster and had worse armor as a trade-off. They played the same. Battle Focus as a rule finally differentiates them, because Dark Eldar are the better combat army out of them. Dark Eldar are the better volume of fire army between the two of them. I mean, every Dark Eldar shooting weapon is poisoned. Right. So they will wound everything on a 4+, and they just throw out torrents of fire. Eldar, on the other hand, have basically rending or mini rending on almost every single gun they shoot. Any gun that's worth taking has rending. And so you look at it, and now the playstyle between a Dark Eldar list and an Eldar list is night and day different. And I think that's more of what Phil Kelly was going for. And I think that's why he was the right choice to write the book, is as the guy that was responsible for reimagining the Dark Eldar how their rules would play out, how the list is constructed, every, you know, facet of that army was him. He was the right person to give Eldar to because he knew Dark Eldar better than anyone, so he could make Eldar different. And that's something that they've never been before. Because, you know, and that's what I like about it. So it could have been 6th edition because,
you know,
I
what else they've never been before? Happy.
It's very true.
Hey, let's talk about Game of Thrones. Did you we're onto something shiny. Did you watch the most recent episode of Game of Thrones?
What, the one with the red wedding that had the internet crying?
Oh yeah. Did you watch it?
Well, yeah, I've watched it. I've also read every single book.
Yeah,
so there is literally nothing that can
I know that there's no surprises, right? And like, I've talked to people who've read the books before and stuff like that, but oh my god, the uproar on the internet was the most amazing thing ever. And when I was watching it again, and I've said I'm not going to read the books because I don't want to spoil the show. I almost went back on that.
Oh,
that was the thing. Is like, this season started out really slow.
Oh my god,
5-6 episodes in, you were just like, fucking nothing has happened. Like, Jesus Christ, we've seen some tits, but like, nothing is happening. And then, like, the last 3-4 episodes have actually just picked up the speed. And all of a sudden, it's just like, whoa, every episode something's happening. Things are going. Like, you know, shit's – people making moves, you know. And you kind of get back into loving the show the way that you loved it when you first started watching it. And I think that that's what I appreciate about it. And then when it got to this whole bit with the Red Wedding, I was just like, oh, my fucking – like, yeah. when motherfuckers start getting stabbed, I was just –
yeah.
Hand over my mouth, like,
and yeah.
Now I've heard it before from people, and they've said it to me. Everyone who's read the book has basically said,
Valar Morghulis.
No. But they've basically said, a Game of Thrones spoiler is telling someone who lives.
Yes.
Not telling someone who dies.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can't sit there and just be like, oh, this person dies. Because that's not a spoiler in Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones, everybody fucking dies. The question is, who lives?
Yes.
And I think that's what's so interesting about Game of Thrones. And I think that that's why I appreciated this episode so much, was because they actually delivered on that whole, like, oh, yeah, sometimes motherfuckers just die.
Yeah. Well, no, but I mean, what's interesting about the books is, you know, and the show parallels the books quite a bit. So you do see that. In season one, realistically, only two people die in the entire first book. You're looking at Robert Baratheon and Ned Stark.
Ned Stark.
Are realistically the only two people of any import that die. I mean, sure, you always have minor characters, and Johnny Houseguard was stabbed in the streets and whatever. Who gives a fuck?
Right.
So you're just like, oh, okay, yeah, that's fine. I totally get it. The king needed to die to set off the Game of Thrones and the Civil War and the blah, blah, blah. And Ned Stark loses his head. Holy crap, that's crazy. And then you get into book two, and realistically, the only big-name guy that dies is Renly Baratheon. So again, you're just following along, and you're just like, okay, yeah, all right. So Stannis is the only Baratheon left alive, all right. So we still got two armies, Battle of Blackwater, bunch of nobodies die again. So again, you know, it's typical fantasy stuff. It isn't until the Red Wedding, which is only in about like 2/3 of the way through book three. There's a lot of stuff that happens after that, and it's all better than that. And they kill basically the entire Stark clan, where you're just like, holy shit, no one is safe. This book is different. Because, I mean, again, in every like fucking fantasy book you've ever written, of course people die because it's a plot device or
right, you have to create revenge
or whatever.
Right, yeah.
Exactly. Motivating factor, someone has to die. But it isn't until the Red Wedding where you're just like, oh my fucking, did that just, holy shit. And that's when you realize that Game of Thrones is something different. And that only really happens, like I said, 2/3 of the way through the third book. After the Red Wedding, everyone just starts to die. And that is when George R. R. Martin is just like, nope, these are humans. Humans are easily killed. I will kill them all.
Well, I think George R. R. Martin was quoted as saying, anytime somebody asks me when the next book is coming out, I kill a Stark. but yes, anyways, I loved it.
Kill Brandon Stark because, God, that is... spoiler... It doesn't get better in the books.
Oh, I don't think it gets better. There's no happy ending to that. Well, it's like Walking Dead, right?
No. I'm not even saying happy ending. Everything to do with Bran Stark is boring as fuck, and that's the problem.
Fair enough. I just thought that it was... I saw the funniest meme today, and this was the meme. One does not simply warg into Hodor.
Well done.
That has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Have a good one.
Cheers.